the complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by... Tonight's episode, King Richard the Third. Now is the winter of our discontent. Such begins King Richard the Third, written in 1593. As opposed to previous podcasts, whatever the heck these things are, I'm going to try not to do such a annoyingly detailed plot synopsis, because that's sort of not the point, I don't think. I'm going in a different direction. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Richard III starts really strong, picks up pretty much on the heels of King Henry VI, Part 3, and it's Richard's plot to take the crown, and he pretty much is the main character who then everyone sort of reacts around and to, because he's really good at, like, saying one thing to one person and then turning around and killing him. he's one of the classic villains, I guess, of Elizabethan and perhaps the world history. Though maybe not. Depends on your perspective. He's the last of the York kings, replaced as the sort of the end of the War of the Roses. Anyway, Richard III goes, or Richard at that point, sort of makes his move throughout it, saying to his friends, you know, help me do this, and they help him, and then he turns around and has them executed, or, you know, somehow taken down a peg in public view. Not very well liked by the people either. I mean, when it gets to the point where Richard's close to sort of making his claim for taking the crown and everything, the people are ambivalent to not really enthusiastic, despite the attempts of various people to rouse them. One of the great scenes in it, though, involves Richard going to the mother of Edward, of one of the people that he's killed, in order to make a marriage that will yield his claim to the throne more credence. I just got back from London, so this one's really jet-lagged and not really very well thought out. Anyway, there's nice references to past events as they sort of refer back to things that Richard has done or other people have done in the King Henry VI cycles. There ghosts come back in the final act. I can tell you, I found Act 3 to be a slog to get through. I was really, really jazzed by the first two acts, and then I thought it sort of lost its momentum in the third act. And it rouses and rises to the challenge, I think, in Acts 4 and 5. But, man, I was not into the third act. There's some nice dialogue, though, when Richard goes and tries to woo the mom, to pretty much woo the girl for him. King Richard says, look, what is done cannot be now amended. He's referring to the fact that he's killed all these people, including her family, and sort of stolen the crown and everything. Men shall deal unadvisedly sometimes, which after hours give leisure to repent. If I did take the kingdom from your sons to make amends, I'll give it to your daughter. If I have killed the issue of your womb to quicken your increase, I will beget mine issue of your blood upon your daughter. So look, he's a reasonable guy. He's willing to give her back the kingdom by taking the daughter and knocking her up. Come on, he's not such a bad guy. It's. I mean, as a villain, he's pretty neat. And as I said, he's the last of the York kings, because as the play climaxes, Henry Tudor comes and sort of wins the day. And kills him. And as the two armies square off, it's sort of a nice. It's where the famous "a horse, a horse, my kingdom for the horse, for a horse." Comes into play. Richard has a great line where he says, "Conscience is but a word that cowards use," which I thought was a nice thing, which I scribbled down. Also, a good Elizabethan word I learned in this play is "moiety," which means half or a very small amount. These are all just little things that I throw in, just because. I don't know, I'm exhausted, and it's you know, 6 in the morning when I'm doing this. Plans, obviously, with the ghosts, you know, as on the eve of on the morn of the battle, the ghosts coming to Richard in the night and warning him that he's going to die and he's going to fail, and hoping, heaping praise on Henry Tudor in the hopes that he can restore things. And it ends with Henry bringing the two roses back together in the War of the Roses and ending that and reestablishing the reign that will run through Shakespeare's time. So it's sort of a propagandistic play for that. While reading the play, there's a great resource on the internet, which, if you're hearing this in the future, is probably called the Space Net or the Astral Net, who knows. But it's called www.r3.org. That's the letter R, the number 3.org. It's people who are really into Richard III, just in real life, the history, and then the Shakespearean play. And there's some nice footnotes that give you contextual and historical events that Shakespeare's chronicling in the play. And it's pretty great to read it that way and sort of get a better understanding of sort of what he's actually using as the basis of his play, which is kind of neat. Richard, by the way, does not go out like a punk. He goes out swinging. And apparently in real life, there was a chance that he could have escaped the battle, and it sort of, I guess, forms the base of the horse, a horse, a kingdom for my horse element, but there's a chance he could have gotten away on a horse, and Richard pretty much is rumored to have said something along the effects of, he will either, you know, defend his crown and be king, or he will die that day, and it will be over anyway, but he was going to get it resolved that day, and someone described him as manly, and he's pretty manly. A bit of a villain, though, obviously. But a pretty good play. As I said, though, the third act sort of lost me. But I didn't think it was up to King Henry VI, Part 3. But it's fascinating with the, you know, continuation of that story. As I said, though, Winner of Our Discontent, Kingdom Who Are Horse, famous lines, all good. And as rambling as this one has been, just, you know, skip to the next one, which I think is Romeo and Juliet, which we've all read a billion times. So that one's going to be fast and cheap and out of control. The complete works of William Shakespeare, as told by me, Kevin Hanna. Oh, and as a quick addendum, I forgot to mention that Richard III is described variously throughout the play as having been born with teeth already in his mouth, and how dangerous he was, and people knew he was going to be rotten and a bad egg. And bad egg. They don't say bad egg. I don't know. It's really early. There's also a nice phrase where someone says, you know, you can always tell what Richard really thinks of you because he's bad at hiding his disdain for you and pretty much everyone. It's true. He's sort of got a plan, but he sort of makes up as it goes along because he gets angry. And I think that's sort of his downfall more than anything else, is that he's got his eye on the prize, but then, you know, sort of loses it every once in a while emotionally and sort of, you know, just starts slaughtering people, which works for a while, but then that sort of catches up to you. Complete works of William Shakespeare, Richard III, yada yada, whatever.